cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. It is indeed Hockey Central Saturday for Gord Stellick. I'm Roger Lajoie. Rick Natras here as always. And hello to everybody on the Sportsnet Radio Network, our friends in Calgary at Sportsnet 960. And, of course, here, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, our Toronto flagship station. The next 2 hours, we'll talk about the NHL playoffs and an exciting playoff indeed it has been. And, of course, the big news of the day out of Washington. In a couple of minutes, we'll hear from Chuck Gormley as well. Comcast Sportsnet Capitals reporter George McPhee, Adam Oates both get the boot this morning in Washington. Rick, great to be with you again, my friend.
Raj, always.
17 years for McPhee. That's a long run.
Yeah, it
franchise.
Is.
What'd you think?
Well, I mean, you had to. I think disappointment. They spent some money. I'm not sure they spent it in the right ways. We know, you know, they capped it off with the Ovechkin with the $134 million. I think the contract was for 13 years. And he's still got $70 million left. And we talked earlier, Raj, when we were off the air, again, is it a lot easier to fire the coach? Apparently it has to be. I mean, Dale Hunter wasn't fired. He chose not to come back. I think he saw the writing on the wall. You're not going to win that argument when you have a $130 million player. Though he scores a lot of goals, again, Rocket Richard, trophy winner again this year, 51 goals, Alex Ovechkin, he does not play 200 feet.
And minus 35.
Yeah, and if you don't play 200 feet as a leader, how do you get other guys to be, you know, to play 200 feet? And there are some guys that do, you know, the Chimeras, the Wards, guys like that, that will do it. But again, they can only bring so much.
Well, and it's an interesting scenario because we talked about this off air as well. Capitals had Bruce Boudreau, considered by just about everybody as a
players coach, too.
Players coach. A players coach, yep. And a good veteran hockey coach.
Yep.
Then they bring in Dale Hunter, who was a great NHL player, but a junior hockey coach for the most part. He comes in, they try that.
Well, the defensive style, that was, they were hoping to have because they had, you know, the offensive abilities. I mean, they've got some offensive gifts there, most definitely. Backstrom, a couple other guys. You look at Green on the back end. Again, he's another guy that is very good if you give him, allow him outside his side of the red line and don't allow him to play in his own end.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, and then they've got some young guys there that are coming up, like Carlson. I like him. He's the horse there that plays both ends. But, again, you bring in a guy like Dale Hunter, which I know the family very well, and he understands what it takes to win. Okay. I mean, another guy that knows what it takes to win.
But that doesn't work.
It didn't work because of the fact that he knew, like, every question was, how come Ovi's not doing this? How come Ovi's not playing that?
He's not scoring.
Well, because Ovi doesn't play on his side of the red line.
So you had Boudreau, you had Hunter, and then you had Adam Oates, highly respected, great Hall of Fame hockey player.
Yep.
So you have three different kind of options. None of them work. Who's next? That will be our question as Chuck Gormley joins us right now from Comcast Sportsnet Capitals reporter. Chuck, thanks very much for being with us. And I guess that is the question, you know, when we go into it. First of all, I don't think anyone's terribly surprised at cleaning house in Washington, but what is the moving forward scenario there now, Chuck?
You know, that's a great question, and I'm not sure they're done cleaning house. The coach and GM are gone, but there's one key guy still here, and he's been kind of wagging the dog for a long time. My question is, if the new GM comes in here, is the first question he asks, can I trade Alex Ovechkin? And I'm not sure of the answer to that, because I asked Ted Leonsis that today, and he said, I'm not the general manager. And he said that I'm gonna empower my general manager the same way I empowered George McPhee. And I guess there are two ways you can read that. One is that he has the power to do whatever he wants, or he has the power to do whatever he wants except trading Alex Ovechkin. So to me, that is the biggest question of this summer. Because I would have loved to be a fly on the wall on some of those meetings that Ted Leonsis had with his players, because I think they were the most telling conversations. And if those players said things about Alex Ovechkin that would lead Leonsis to think that they can't win a Stanley Cup with him, then that's a bigger move down the road.
Well, and I'm sure they have to look at it. But he scores goals. We know that. But he's one-sided, didn't want to play on the other side. Then everything was peachy keen because he got to play, you know, the way he was. And Oates convinced him that, you know, it would give better looks. And he did maybe struggle a little bit because teams knew to keep him out of the inside, keep him on his backhand, Ovechkin we're talking about. And maybe you had a better chance of not giving him an opportunity to put the puck on the net. And that's the biggest thing from anywhere with him. But, the inability, the long shifts, the inability to, the commitment to back check, backside pressure is so huge in the National Hockey League. You know that, Chuck. These type of things, to me, wear on the other players. You can only ask of everybody else to do it one way and have one guy do it another until it causes friction or it certainly does not give you a solid game plan.
You know, and it's interesting because you can always make this argument, but you can also make arguments against other players who are goal scorers and are not the best defensive players in the league. I mean, Steven Stamkos scores a lot of goals. Does he ever get comparisons to Alex Ovechkin defensively? No, he never does. Does he play better defense than Alex? Probably better, but I don't know if it's a lot better. There is that side of the argument. I mean, if you had told me 2 years ago when Adam Oates was hired as the head coach at the Capitals that he would have his captain win the Hart Trophy and then win a Rocket Richard Trophy and he would be fired, he would have just left because that's exactly what he was brought in for, to re-energize Ovi. He did, and now he's looking for a job.
It's interesting, and you talk about top scorers. You can say the same thing about, Kessel here in Toronto, Spezza. It's funny how some players get more blame for their lack of defensive prowess than others and big scorers. Chuck Gormley is our guest from Comcast Sportsnet. Capitals reporter, I'm Roger Lajoie for Gord Stelic. Rick Natras is here. It's Hockey Central Saturday, Sportsnet Radio Network. Glad you're with us. A little later, we'll talk to Aaron Portsline on the Columbus-Pittsburgh series. What a series that has been. Chuck, this is kind of stating the obvious, but I got to ask, was this more a case of shelf life for these two guys? Was it the relationship with Ovechkin, or was it very simply 3 points? In other words, the 3 points they missed the playoffs by. If they make the playoffs, even a first-round playoff exit, are we having this discussion today?
That's another great question. And they were that close. They were 3 points away. They blew 13 two-goal leads this year. So that's how close they were to really being a playoff team. And if they had lost in the first round, I do think that we would be having this conversation. Because I think that Ted Leonsis saw this team 4 years ago, 121 points, President's Trophy, and he thought, it's not a matter of whether we'll win the Cup, it's how many. And it went backwards fast. And I think if this team had been knocked out in the first round again, like it had last year, I think we would still be having this conversation. And I think a lot of the fingers would be pointed in the same direction. So, I'm not sure what is the right approach for this team, because if Alex Ovechkin stays, what will be different? If Barry Trotz coaches this team, will it be different? If Peter Laviolette coaches this team, will it be different? I'm not sure, would they?
Chuck, we see what happens in Vancouver, You bring in, a Trevor Linden there to appease, really, season ticket bases, and also, the fans. And then you see what they do here in Toronto with Brendan Shanahan coming in, with the demise, or the flop, or whatever you want to call it, how the Leafs finished the season, winning 3 of 18, I believe it was, the last 18. And then they bring in a guy that's going to be the buffer between ownership. McPhee was president. Dick Patrick was the president there. Do you see something like that maybe happening? And was it because of season ticket base or sponsorship, or was it a money thing?
I could see that happening. I could see someone coming in here as a president. I think that's the new trend now, like you mentioned. So I know that there are several candidates that they said that they've already started exploring and making their list, and that there are several candidates that they have that they have not been granted permission to speak with yet because those teams are in the playoffs. Not everyone's the same with that. There are some teams that will grant permission during the playoffs if their team's still alive, and there are others who will say no. We'll allow you to talk to this guy when we're done. So I keep hearing Jim Benning's name. That is the one name that everyone puts at the top of their list in Boston. I keep hearing Ron Hextall's name, Tim Burke, even Paul Fenton. I mean, if Paul Fenton is available and he can bring in Barry Trotz, that's a possibility. So there's quite a long list. And one thing that Dick Patrick said today was he did not expect or anticipate having a new GM before the draft. So they're going to take their time with this.
Boy, it'd be interesting when you go into a draft without a general manager, but that, I guess, leads to the strength of maybe the rest of the hockey department and how confident they are in it, because it's an awkward position for sure. Let's maybe put the, and of course, the general manager, I'm sure, will be hired first, and than the coach, and better be that way at any rate. So, but what kind of a coach now do you think this team needs? And Rick and I were talking about this earlier, Chuck. They brought in Boudreau, who was a great career hockey coach and a player's coach and a good man and a professional coach.
A lot Everyone of success agrees. There other than the playoffs.
No right? question. Dale Hunter, former player, gritty guy, defensive specialist, close to a Hall of Fame player in the day, different mentality, different kind of guy, a little more hard-nosed. And they go with Adam Oates, former player. So it's not like they've had the same kind of guy all 3 years. So what kind of a coach, unless they make major personnel changes, do they try now?
I'm laughing because I don't have one. I mean, you said exactly what has happened here. They thought Adam Oates was the hybrid. One thing I found really interesting on breakup day was that Brooks Leich, who really was not available to this team for much of the season, but has been here for 10 years, said that he thought this team was the closest to winning the Stanley Cup when Dale Hunter was the coach. And Ovi, you know, will flat out tell you he couldn't stand them. I mean, they didn't even talk near the end of the season. But he said that because that team bought in. Even Ovi bought in. He was blocking shots, and they went two rounds into the playoffs. There were one bad penalty by Joel Ward from winning that series against the Rangers, and who knows what could have happened. But they also said that no player could block that many shots and play that way for an extended period, that everybody bought in, but they weren't sure if they would buy in for another year or 2 years. And that's another thing that everyone has to contemplate here. Is it the coach or is it the players? Is it the makeup of these players, the mental makeup of these players, that they're not going to win, that they're not going to sacrifice? And if you determine that, or if a GM determines that, then there will be major changes.
Yeah, and talking about Dale Hunter, I go back with Mark, longtime junior, won a cup together, Montreal, St. Louis. You know, we spent a lot of our growing up. I'm not sure we grew up, but I mean,
when you were younger.
Chuck, we spent a lot of younger in 20s together, and that's in the 80s, but so we had a lot of fun. So, and Dale, you know, and again, Dale's, you know, pretty mum on it. I've seen him talk to him, everything, the opportunity, and everybody wondered why. I mean, his situation in London is like second to none in Canadian junior hockey. But again, I don't think he realized, he might have not won that war. And is that the case of maybe the skepticism of, even if you wanted to bring in a Trotz and guys like this, are they going to look at that and say, is it a war I can win? Because you're trying to win two wars here. First, convince your marquee player, and he is a marquee player, there's no doubt about it, and then convince everybody else that we need to play a certain way to be successful if you want to be a winner. If you want to continue to have personal success and make money, then continue the way you are. But if we want to play the hard way, is that something that maybe a coach is going to look at, I think, and say, can I win the first war? And that is to convince our marquee player that we need to change our ways.
It's a great question. I think that's something that every GM and every coach is going to consider before they come here. I talked to a potential general manager candidate, and he said to me, the first question I would ask is, can I trade Alex Ovechkin? And it goes back to the same point. I think the coach would feel the same way. There are coaches in this league who feel that's a challenge. I can get Alex Ovechkin to win the Stanley Cup. I think Mike Keenan was one of the guys who wanted this job 2 summers ago, and he tried to make that convincing argument. And I don't know. I mean, are all hockey players the same? No, they're not. And to me, until Alex Ovechkin wins the Stanley Cup, he will always have this question about him. And I'm not sure that he'll ever answer that question because, you know, it's just, and I don't know if it's a coach. I don't know if a coach, it's the same question. I came here 3 years ago, and the same questions I heard then, I'm hearing now. I'm hearing questions about accountability. You know, can this locker room get along? They got rid of Alex Semin. They thought that might be the answer, and it wasn't. So at some point, you have to look at this guy, and he has 7 years, $70 million, and it doesn't tail off at the end. It's $10 million at the end of that contract when he's 35 years old.
Yeah, and it averages out to 9.559 or something. But again, he was making, I believe, about $9 million the last 6 years, if I'm not correct, 54, yeah. So he's got $70 million left. I'm just wondering, do you think Alex is mature enough to figure out he's been in the game long enough. He's got, you know, he's won a trophy, a personal trophy every year he's been in the league pretty much, I believe, be it a scoring race, be it Hart trophy, be it whatever. Do you think he's mature enough to finally maybe realize, listen, if I want to win, and that's going to dictate, like it does with everybody else, that I was a true superstar because I did win, that question mark or cloud is not going to be over his head. Do you think he's mature enough to take this into consideration and say, maybe I need to change, and that will help me win a cup, and that will help solidify my greatness?
Well, he's 28 years old. He's been in the league, what, 9 years? I don't think it's going to change. I don't know. I know every time I talk to him, he says, my job is to score goals. Every time. And I wonder if he needs to start saying, my job, win games. Because he can score goals, and he's proven it. But he's also stayed on the ice too long to score that goal, or he doesn't score a goal, and so he's not getting back the other way. So it's all the same arguments you have. I don't know. I don't know. And I'm not sure what it would take for that to change. If it hasn't changed by now, I don't know. And it goes back to this point. Can you win a Stanley Cup with a guy who doesn't fact check? And there are lots of guys in this league who don't fact check and who score goals. And if you put different players around him, would the results be different? I'd love to know that.
Chuck Gormley with us, Comcast Sportscast. Capitals reporter, Boston with a goal. Lucic in front, 3-1 now, leading the Red Wings and a chance to close out the series in the third period. We'll keep an eye on that. Coming up shortly, Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch and Shelly Anderson of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette talk about those two series going on. Chuck, final question, we'll let you go, and we're probably remiss in not bringing this up earlier. Two good guys, two very good hockey men, lost their jobs today. And I've heard nothing but good things about George McPhee, what kind of a person he is. Maybe a word about him and Adam Oates and their futures. I mean, it's always tough when you're fired, and it's especially tough when you're fired in a public forum.
You're right. And 17 years with the Capitals, everyone I've talked to about George McPhee has said that he will find a job, and he will find a job quickly. The one name, the one team that keeps coming up is Calgary. I've also heard Vancouver, which is probably less likely. And I've also heard New Jersey as maybe helping out Lou Lamoureux in some way. So he will definitely get a job in the NHL. He's very well respected, smart man. And I would be surprised if he didn't have something within the next few weeks. Adam Oates, I respect him an incredible amount as a reporter, honest, tried to get the best and the most out of his players. And, you know, when you don't win, players start pointing fingers, and I think that's what happened here. So I'd love to see him back in the NHL. And I asked him last week, you know, about that assistant coach stigma. You know, can an assistant coach be a great head coach? And he believes he is a great head coach. So I'd love to see him get another job as a head coach because he obviously can do it as an assistant, and this team had the best power play in the league pretty much the whole season.
Interesting day in Washington for sure. Chuck Gormley joining us from Comcast Sportsnet to talk about it. Chuck, really appreciate
your time. Thanks, Chuck.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
That's Chuck Gormley, Roger Lajoie for Gord Stellick.
I know one thing about George McPhee. He's probably pound for pound is still the toughest GM in the National
really,
Hockey League.
He could take a lot of guys in the front office.
He was, oh, yeah. No, really. I mean, he was through my era, bud, and he wasn't big, but he was tough. He was tough as nails, and he fought some big boys. And we know what he did to Lorne Mullican after that exhibition game. You know,
I recall that. Yes, I do.
Pretty well knocked him out. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but it is the game and a different perspective. But, again, what perspective? And that's the big question mark, Raj, there is in Washington. Does it really matter until you figure out to get somebody as much as if he's still commenting at 28 years old after 9 years in the hockey league, I'm here to score goals and doesn't get about the win. He doesn't
have anything. So let me ask you this then before we take a break. We've got here's Alex Ovechkin.
Yep.
Okay. And we all know his defensive liabilities, and the minus is ridiculous. But is he at least somewhat unfairly portrayed? Is his defensive play and his selfishness, and I'll call it, is it as bad as Spezza, Kessel? Well, let's drop off all the top scorers.
Well, I would
in the
think
NHL.
I don't think Stamkos is a good example. I think Stamkos
Chuck
is
Hughes
built.
Stamkos.
Yeah,
I think his
so.
Game's a little.
His
better.
Game's close to 200 feet as it's getting, and he's still 23 years old and realizes. He wants to do.
But how much do people talk about Kessel's defensive play or Spetz's defensive play?
And,
or,
but again, what we're talking about is not, and maybe not. I mean, we're talking an $8 million man for 8 years coming up, and we're talking about a guy that has improved his game. He's not the physical, you know, aspect that Ovechkin likes to be the hitter rather than the hitty, or sometimes he'd rather suck you in and pretend he's not watching and then knock you on your rear end. But I think, you know, with Ovechkin, I think after 9 years is the willingness or the not the willingness to, you know, change is a real concern for me. And years ago when he was brought, you know, into the National Hockey League, he was young, Crosby was young, and the question was,
who's better?
Who would you, who would you build a team around? Yeah. And, you know, of course, everybody says, well, you guys are Canadian, and you know, you're going to pick Crosby because he's Canadian, and everybody loves Canadian. But he makes people better around him. And we can still say that, maybe not in this playoffs right now, but, I mean, we can say that as a whole and seriously about Crosby. But has Ovechkin made anybody better? Has Backstrom made Ovechkin better? And that's the key because Ovechkin, we're talking about a guy in Backstrom, which was a minus 20 as well, your number one center.
Another problem, too.
But 61 assists, and I'm sure he was in on, if not all of Ovechkin's goals, he was in on 95% of them.
Well, speaking of Crosby, we'll talk about him and that series next because Aaron Portsline joins us from the Columbus Dispatch. Blue Jackets reporter there, 2-2 series tie. What a series that's been. And later, Shelley Anderson from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette will try to figure out Crosby and Malkin without a goal
in this series.
Not good.
And James Neal. I mean, look at that. You know, his numbers as well. I mean, their top boys aren't being their top boys.
And you're in trouble when that happens
in
the playoffs.
Correct. That's correct. Oh, you're in trouble anytime. It doesn't happen. Especially when you got, what does that add up to? I think you're about $22 million.
Yeah. Right, I thought it was the goals you were adding
up.
No,
zero.
I knew that was
zero, but add another, I don't know, what's that, six?
That's a lot of money. Right? A lot of money for no production. Hockey Central Saturday continues. That's Rick Natras. I'm Roger Lajoie for Gord Stellick, and you're listening to the Sportsnet Radio Network and here in Toronto on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and in Calgary on Sportsnet 960.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
The Blue Jackets get it up the center ice. There's Umberger getting rid of it. Down it goes. The shot. Score! Foligno scores! Columbus sends it back to Pittsburgh. Tied!
Bob Cole. Playoff time. Nothing wrong with hearing that. Unless you're a Penguins fan, because that's a Columbus game winner. Foligno, and the series is tied. What a bizarre series. That has been. It's Hockey Central Saturday for Gord Stellick. I'm Roger Lajoie. Rick Natras is in for Rick Natras, as he always does.
Same time.
And later in this hour, Shelley Anderson will talk to us about the from the Pittsburgh perspective.
It'll be interesting.
It will be interesting for sure. Because this series, go figure it. I mean,
Figure the Penguins. Like, go figure them. I mean, they were decimated on the back end and they kept winning. Yeah. Now they're healthy and it can't be a consistent, you know. We had Phil Bourque on with Gordon and I last Saturday. And he talked about the D, and everybody talks about the D, but it's a team that I don't like in their own end. I haven't liked them, you know, 4 or 5 years since they won the cup. And everybody wants to blame Fleury, and there's a lot of reason to in the past, but I don't think you can blame them for this series. I don't think you can, because the fact is they're giving up way too many opportunities, and Columbus is working way too hard to allow any team that many opportunities.
Well, maybe here's one of the factors, and joining us now is Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch. Blue Jackets reporter. Aaron, always great to chat with you. Maybe we're spending too much time just talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins. Maybe we should be talking more about how well the Columbus Blue Jackets are playing. What's your thoughts on this really bizarre series so far, Aaron?
Well, it is really bizarre. I mean, you guys are right on all points. The one thing I think surprised me is you would think coming into this that if the Blue Jackets were to have any prayer whatsoever, that Sergei Bobrovsky would have to be, A, their best player, and be markedly better than Marc-Andre Fleury. Now, he has not made the big gaffe like Fleury made at the end of Game 4, but Bobrovsky has not played. He has not been the Bob, as they like to say, in the dressing room when he's playing well. He's been okay. He's been inconsistent. He's been streaky. Columbus has played its game to a T. They've hit him twice as much as they have been hit. I think they've frustrated him. I think they've sort of helped push them into this sort of blasé effort, this approach that doesn't quite make sense. And I'm really intrigued to see how the Penguins come out tonight, because I have a feeling the Blue Jackets are going to see their best effort of the series tonight.
Yeah, and I think what the Blue Jackets have done is they've kept their gap between their defensemen and their forwards in all three zones for, you know, the majority of the series in my eyes. And that's really hindered that separation that Pittsburgh likes, you know, with those long stretch passes, or, you know, get that separated, bring in that trailer, and that trailer is allowed to go east to west. They're making Pittsburgh go north to south, and I'm not sure Pittsburgh likes that style. Well, it doesn't seem like they like that style, and it certainly isn't benefiting them, and I think it's benefiting Columbus but far most. But let me ask you this. You've got two 27-year-olds, Dubinsky and Jack Johnson. You've got some guys, you know, not a great amount of experience on the back end in playoffs, but you got two guys that are leading the way. Dubinsky was certainly, in our eyes, I thought he was going to be an Issa Tikkanen scenario where he's just going to follow Crosby all over the way and don't worry about the puck at all. And he's got 6 points in this series. He's playing 21 minutes, and, you know, he's a plus one. And then Jack Johnson, what can you say about his game and how he's elevated it? And how his game, to me, it's, you think with Jack specifically, is this a stepping stone to see really the potential that everybody felt he's always had?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because Jack takes a lot of bullets. Like, there's a lot of people around the league that are not Jack Johnson fans as a player, and the new stats crowd can't stand him. You know, I don't know what to make of this guy entirely. I do think he plays best when he has a bit of a chip on his shoulder. His game awakened in January, if you remember the spat when he was left off.
The U.S. Olympic team, yeah.
Yeah, right. And it was clear that, you know, the coaches didn't vote for him to be on a team. And one of those coaches was Todd Richards. That's awkward. That really motivated him, and he played great from there. I think there's a chip on his shoulder in this series as well. He is really, really good friends with Sidney Crosby. You might say best friend.
Prep school together. Yep.
Yeah, we went to Shattuck together. And I think he came into this series, and the Blue Jackets did give him no hope, no chance of advancing. And Jack has been the same Jack from day one. And at first it sounded ridiculous, him saying, you know, why would we be in awe of these guys? We're not lucky to be here. We earned it here. And there's no surprise that we're playing with these guys where everybody else was surprised. But I think that confidence has sort of trickled down through the dressing room. I think the young guys have used it almost as their guidepost, and he deserves a ton of credit for the way that he's playing.
Aaron Portzline is with us from the Columbus Dispatch. I'm Roger Lajoie for Gord Stellick. Rick Natras here, as always, at Hockey Central Saturday on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Shelley Anderson coming up from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette to talk about this series from the Pens' perspective a little more as well. And then Trip Tracy later, who is calling the Avalanche Wild Series, another terrific series for sure. Aaron, I know there's no answer for this, because if there was an answer, people would you know, have it. What is this two-goal lead, this back and forth? Because among the confounding things about this series, all the cliches don't apply. Well, usually you get a two-goal lead in the playoffs, you're home and chilled out. Well, the series doesn't really get interesting until the home team loses. Well, both home teams have lost. Like, there's two-goal leads blown. It's back and forth. It's a dead-even series, but I think a lot of people are surprised the way it's dead-even. Does anybody have the edge right now, four games in?
Nobody has the edge, I don't think. I think, you know, my God, this thing, it has to settle down at some point, right? I mean, this is the first series ever that's had four games with multiple goal leads blown, and they've only played four games, right? We may just be getting started. It's interesting, after game three, Brooks Orpik had things to say that irritated the Blue Jackets greatly. You could tell they were inexperienced. They panicked. They looked like they had not been in that situation before. And once they looked like that, we knew we had them. Veteran teams don't do this sort of thing. We were able to take advantage of their youth and experience. And then the Blue Jackets came back in game four and did exactly the same thing to Pittsburgh, which prompted a few, you know, voices in the dressing room saying, maybe Pittsburgh's too experienced. Maybe they've just been through this too many times, and that's why it happened. Mockingly, of course, nobody knows. Nobody knows the answer for this. The goalies haven't been great. I think the Blue Jackets have had a tendency, strangely, to get a little bit away from the way that they like to play, which is not an easy style to play. They feel at times like they've taken their foot off the gas. I think Pittsburgh has felt a couple times like Columbus is ready to just go off and die, and they haven't done that. They've pushed right back again. tough lessons this time of year to learn. And we'll see how either of these teams apply it should they get the dreaded 3-1 lead in this game.
Yeah, and I think Orpik should have looked back at the sweep that Boston put on them last year, maybe the series against Philadelphia 2 years ago when it was like most games were 8-7, I think. And, you know, I don't think I'd be too proud of that if I'm a veteran defenseman. But you've got a couple. Tuutens, he's coming back today. He should be an asset to you guys. And how's Murray doing? I understand he's questionable on his game-time decision.
Yeah, they say game-time decision, but everything I've heard is that he's going to play. Todd Richards has said he expects him to play. So those two guys go back in. Nick Schultz and Dalton Proud, who played really well. Both of those guys in Game 3 come out of the lineup. Tuten stabilizes Jack Johnson. Ryan Murray, even though he's a rookie, has stabilized the
very good rookie.
Yeah, very good. Just such a calm guy back there. Those are two big adds, I think, for the Blue Jackets.
Aaron, you know, another factor from the Pittsburgh perspective, and we'll talk about this a little bit later when we check in Pittsburgh, but Crosby and Malkin do not have a goal in the series. And listen, it's four games. It's small sample size. Say whatever you want. But when the two top guys are not producing goals, it's a concern. Is there something about the Columbus keying on them? You've talked to the coaching staff and some of the players on this team. How much of a factor is if you shut those guys down, you win the series?
Well, both of them, it's Todd Richards and Brandon Dubinsky, who has had the job of shutting down Sidney Crosby, they have both said that you're not going to shut these guys down for an entire seven-game series. It doesn't work that way. So far, they have. Crosby's got four assists. They're all secondary assists. Malkin has four assists. Two of them are secondary assists. But beyond the point, neither of these guys have been really engaged offensively. And you know what? I think the Blue Jackets deserve some credit for that. Absolutely. Dubinsky showed, I think, had a huge part of this in Game 1. Even though they lost Game 1, he was extremely physical with Sidney Crosby. Put him to the ice a couple of times. You know, no back down whatsoever. And I think that showed this young team, the Boone Jenners of the world, Ryan Murray, Ryan Johansson, all of the young guys that they've got on the team, it's okay to play that way against this kid you've been watching since you were a little kid growing up. And they had to get over that. They were 0-5 against the Penguins this year in the regular season. There was absolutely a sense of awe, I thought, at times when these two teams played each other during the regular season. Dubinsky pushed them through that threshold. Jenner has not played with any sense of awe, not in any way too much respect. Respect, yes, but not backing off from these guys at all. And I think it's had an effect. I think they've been surprised at how different and how much more physical this team has been during the playoffs versus the regular season meetings.
Detroit Red Wings with a quick goal. 3-2 now, 3.5 minutes to go in Boston. Bruins still up trying to close out the series.
Yeah, Aaron, and you talk about those young guys, and I guess sometimes it's best that they don't know. And I think, and you know what I mean? And I was one of those guys going against, you know, Battle Quebec back in the days, my first experience in the NHL playoffs. And, you know, I didn't really pay attention to anything. Thank God most of the stuff was written in French and I couldn't read it. You know what I mean? But seriously, on a serious note, sometimes you don't want to feed them too much because the fact is you want them to experience it and you want that enthusiasm, but you want it controlled. And I think that's what you're seeing in a lot of cases with Columbus. They're trying to get Pittsburgh off their game. Is that something that, and again, I've watched Columbus. We saw them come into Toronto, you know, near the end of the year and beat them 6-0 and, you know, beat Toronto 3 in a row. And that really was the difference for Toronto making the playoffs, really, and not making the playoffs. But I didn't see them being an overly physical team. What I saw was a consistent finish checks up and down the ice, wins battles or compete at least in the battles. And that's where we're seeing that. And as it elevated just a little bit more.
It has. And what's really interesting to me is there's only been 86 penalty minutes in this four game series total, both teams so far, which is one of the lower series going right now. That's a game for Dallas Anaheim. Boone Jenner's got this really cool attribute, I think, for a player of his age where he can bug the living heck out of somebody, but he skates away. And he's not afraid of conflict, but he doesn't get drawn into anything. And I've never seen anybody that young handle it quite like he does. They have clearly irritated Pittsburgh, but not in a way, not a Philadelphia style between the whistles or after the whistles type of shoving and jousting and getting into people's heads. It hasn't been any of that. It's been a fairly clean series. Now, I would suspect that you're going to see some debris out there tonight, but to this point, Columbus has hit more. They've pursued more. They have stuck to the forecheck, get the puck behind the defenseman, make the Penguins skate 200 feet with it, as you said, Rick, 200 feet straight line, which they're not that happy to do. They would rather have a little bit more time, a little bit more space to get creative. They've not had that. It has irritated them at times, but they have not been drawn in, either team, into this, you know, collection of penalty minutes where it's all over the board. Lots of penalties, but there's been, you know, some interference and hookings and trippings. None of the, there's not been one fight. There's been very few roughings. It's been a fairly controlled series.
And when the power plays have gone on, Columbus has a slight advantage. They're 5-for-20 with the extra man. The Penguins 4-for-21. That's another factor with Crosby Malkin. You'd think that while Columbus just hang in there five aside, but it's Columbus with a slight advantage on the power plays. Are you surprised by that?
Well, a bit, yeah. And it's easy to forget. I mean, you remember the game four goal by Dubinsky with 23 seconds left in the winner in overtime. You know, they were put in that situation where those goals made a difference because of their power play, and they scored one in the first period to make it 2-1 temporarily. Then it got to 3-1. They had a full two-minute 5-on-3, and they scored there to make it 3-2, and now you've got an interesting game the rest of the way. The power play is not just the numbers and the total. They have scored really clutch goals for them. I believe two power play goals in game two, and they came back to win as well.
They did, yep.
And I guess, Aaron, final question before we let you go is, when we look forward to game five, is there another factor, even as much as these teams have played in this series, is there a key element of it in your mind that's going to be the separator this time around? Because I see nothing between these two teams. I think Rick and I were talking earlier. Maybe it's somebody coming back into the lineup. Maybe it's some, and you even said, is it going to settle down? I guess that's what I'm asking, too. Is there a difference maker still in this series that's going to kind of restore order if you're Pittsburgh or make the upset possible for Columbus?
Well, I think the one thing that's still out there for Columbus is Sergei Bobrovsky having one of those games. He's not had one of those games in the playoffs yet in his career. It's about time through the Blue Jackets for one of those games where Sergei Bobrovsky, you just look at him somewhere in the second period and you think, I don't see a goal getting in. I don't know why I feel this way. You just don't see a goal getting past him. He has that ability. And they haven't seen it yet. He's been really inconsistent. He's had some bright spots. I think the Blue Jackets really need a superb performance by Bobrovsky tonight. Fleury looks shaky. He looked really shaky at the end of game four. Columbus is going to try to expose that, but I don't see Columbus having the puck much early. I think the Penguins are going to come out flying, and if Bobrovsky holds him in, if he gets into one of those grooves that won him the Vezina Trophy last year, I think that's what's still out there for the Blue Jackets.
Be a lot of fun tonight for sure. Aaron Portsline, the Columbus Dispatch, joining us here on Hockey Central Saturday. Aaron, thanks so much.
Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
And just to go, Bobrovsky, right now, 3.22 goals against, which is unheard of for him, at least once he went to Columbus, maybe in Philly. That's why they traded him. But a 900 save percentage. This guy won the Vezina last year because he carried them on his back. Not only that last year, but this year, too. I mean, you know, there was a little bit more added to that, the mix for Columbus this year. But Bobrovsky certainly against a tough, you know, offensive-minded Pittsburgh team, but still. He's the guy that usually you don't see those numbers when you talk about him.
No, not even over a four-game stretch, was a small stretch for sure. Hockey Central Saturday, Roger Lajoie for Gord Stelick. Rick Natras couldn't get a hold of Shelley Anderson. We'll get him another time. A little later in our 6 o'clock hour, we'll have Trip Tracy, NBC and Hurricanes analyst. He's doing the Avalanche Wild Series. Rick Tockett, Flyers analyst on the Flyers and Rangers. And Andy Olschick will talk to us about the Bruins and the Red Wings, who are down to 50 seconds to go, and Boston up 3-2. Don't want to jinx it for the Bruins fans listening in, but we could have our first second-round matchup finally. An heroic postseason, I think, and performance just to get into the postseason by the Detroit Red Wings. But end of the
what
day, Rick,
growth.
Just not enough.
Well, you know, and everybody, 23 years in a row, Detroit in the playoffs, and you look at the, you know, the injuries, second only to Pittsburgh. A lot of people forget that about Pittsburgh, that they were devastated by injuries, and I said that earlier. Their top 6D were out of the lineup. At one point, I think they came in and Toronto played them and ended up losing in Pittsburgh to them, Raj. that they ended up, they had six, all their top six defensemen out of the lineup other than Olli Määttä. I shouldn't say that. Four of six, Olli Määttä and Niskanen were the only two, I believe, that played all 82
games. Still at 109 points.
Yeah, and they did. And then you're looking at a Detroit team that, you know, went through 13 first-year players, I believe, you know, and then you finally, without Datsyuk and Zetterberg playing together since February 8th, last game was the first time they were together on the ice in a game since February 8th. And you see a team like that. So, again, this is a team that, you know, has drafted well, developed well. We all know the template because they were the template for many years. Now we're looking at the presidency, then the GM, now a coach type of, you know, thing because it worked in Boston. So it's got to work somewhere else. I think that's another question or another conversation in itself. But Detroit, the fact that they went this far and still are competing against what I feel is the best team in the East and maybe – the NHL. I'm still thinking the San Jose might be that team, but
well, the Sharks got to win the cup before we say they're the best team. But they're,
no, but
I agree
right now. But I'm just saying Detroit is. They've got to be ecstatic because then we talked about Daniel Alfredson and what would this mean to him next year. The money they paid to him, they can pay these rookies. There's got
five guys
for the price of him. Yeah. So I think they're very happy in where they're going to be and where they are, and certainly what's going to happen for them next year.
And as great as an owner as Mike Ilitch has been, I think even he would be floored by what they've been able to accomplish with the team they've got.
It is just, you know what, we talk about, you know, the culture, and we hear a lot of that in Toronto. Thought it was changed under that 48-game schedule. We see that it hasn't. And that compete level and the willingness to play right, Boston just scored to make an empty netter to make it 4-2. And you see that what they bring to the table and how they play and the right way to play in that 200-foot game, and that's what you want your kids coming in to play like. And if they're not going to play that way, Raj, they're going to spend another year in the minors.
4-2 Boston wins coming up. Trip Tracy will join us, talk about the Avalanche in the Wild. It's Hockey Central Saturday. I'm Roger Lajoie for Gord Stellick with Rick Natras on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca.
Well, we've got a second-round playoff matchup in the National Hockey League. Good evening, everybody. I'm Roger Lajoie for Gord Stellick. Rick Natras here, Hockey Central Saturday on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Hi to our good friends in Calgary listening at Sportsnet 960 as well, and of course Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto. Later in this hour, Eddie Olczyk will join us, talk about the Bruins and the Red Wings. Sean Gordon of the Globe and Mail. Montreal Canadiens now know who they're going to play. It'll be the Boston Bruins. They've met so many times in the playoffs over the years, but oh, one more matchup, sure, why not? How much fun will that series be? In a couple of moments, we'll speak to Trip Tracy as well, NBC and a Hurricanes analyst. He's been calling the Avalanche and the Wild Montreal-Boston.
Well, that's what I was just going to say to you. Did you ever think the Habs or anybody else would be happy to face the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, that's a great point.
You know what? Only because
we the matchup.
Detroit matchup here, and we know what Detroit's done with Anaheim in the last couple of years. And, you know, I believe the last 3 years they've beaten out either the number one or number two seed team. They were 3-1 against the Boston Bruins this year, I believe. Or they won, you know, they
won three games.
They won three games, won that series. They won that series. The Habs, if anybody had watched their last game, the Boston Bruins and the Montreal Canadiens, you would have thought it was reversed, even though Montreal had a good year, that who was the top team in the East. Because the way they handle it, their speed, and the speed through the neutral zone, that really gives Boston a problem, or had during the regular season. So if anybody says they're happy that they're playing the Boston Bruins, the Hab fan, they should be, because they play very well against the Boston Bruin team that a lot of teams aren't capable of playing well.
Yeah, the matchup is good for them, but the Boston Bruins have certainly shown they know how to win playoff
games.
Well,
no, I'm 100%, but I said if anybody had the most confidence,
there'd be two teams,
Detroit coming in first and foremost.
And we just saw what happened there.
But Montreal for sure, because we saw that Montreal played four lines. We see Boston plays four lines. We see Boston play 60. We see Montreal play 60. And we're talking about two of the best goalies in the National Hockey League with Price and Rask. So
great matchup.
It's going to be a great series.
Trip Tracy joins us now from NBC and Hurricanes analyst. He's been calling the Avalanche and Wild series. Trip, thanks for joining us.
Yes.
Wild is the word for this series. Were you surprised the way Minnesota answered back after the first two games, Trip? We were all talking about the young guns and the Avalanche and Patrick Waugh, and now we're looking at this series going, holy smoke, there's a lot of young guns and exciting hockey in Minnesota, too.
Boy, you guys are right. This is why tonight's going to be so interesting, because you look at the dominance of the home teams in the Western Conference first round, and this has been every bit of that. Colorado, I think we're going to remember what Nathan MacKinnon did in the first and second game for his entire career.
7 points, yeah.
Star-studded.
Yeah.
And if MacKinnon hadn't been doing it, all we would have been talking about was Gabe Landeskog, who plays more of a Forsberg-esque type power game, and then what Paul Stastny's done. So then you shift to Minnesota, and that was as complete of domination, quite candidly, that had it not been for Semyon Varlamov. I mean, you're talking about three, four goal type margins of victory for the Wild. So that's what sets up tonight as being such an interesting one.
Yeah,
we're going to find out if it truly is a homer series.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about. And when you talk homer series, you talk about last change. And I think that was huge for the Minnesota Wild going home. Getting Ryan Suter out with that young, as you said, the MacKinnon, Langeskog, and the Stastny line, and keeping him, that line at bay, and they certainly shut him out, right? I mean, we know that. How big is that last change in this series compared to other series in your mind?
It's magnified, it seems. I mean, because of, the type of horse that Suter is. And then you really have Brodin and Spurgeon that, it's not exactly a deep Wild defense after that. Scandella has gotten better as the series has gone along, and the majority of the goals here in Colorado when that Stastny, Landeskog, MacKinnon line was on fire, Suter wasn't on the ice. So, I mean, the proof's in the pudding at how important that last change is, and then Mike Yeo, I think, adjusted beautifully and made a point not only to take advantage of the last change in St. Paul, Minnesota in games 3 and 4, but he made a point to make sure that Stastny, MacKinnon, and Landeskog spent so much time playing in their own end that even if they did get it out, they had no energy to be electrifying in any sense. So it's gonna be a central part of what we watch tonight, is if Patrick Waugh can take advantage of the fact that he's the guy that gets react last here in Denver tonight.
Trip Tracy is with us, NBC and Hurricanes analyst, calling the Avalanche and Wild series in these playoffs. I'm Roger Lajoie for Gord Stellick. Rick Natras here. It's Hockey Central Saturday on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Eddie Olczyk coming up in about 10 minutes. And we'll also hear later in the program from Sean Gordon of the Globe and Mail covering the Canadiens. Trip, we know you got to get going, so we'll keep it brief here. Two quick more questions for you. Rick, go ahead.
I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about, though the series is tied, your top line, I'm not saying they're not playing well, but Koivu, Parisi, and Pominville, but they have yet to score. They've got some assists and whatnot, and they're playing some big minutes. Is there any concern there, or is it just a matter of time? And then with Kemper coming in and Brzgalov starting, I can understand, I guess it's a two-part question, understand why Brzgalov would get the start because of the experience. But this kid in the net now, he doesn't seem to think that anything's going on other than him playing extremely well.
Okay, so the first answer is that Varlamov has been so stellar that the Parisi could have a bunch in this series. He was the best player I thought Minnesota had in Game 4 with his work ethic that, literally never stops in all areas.
100 miles an hour.
And effective. I mean, he's got energy and execution. So, Pominville, his game really got better, I thought, when he started thinking shot more. It was a big part of the power play goal by Charlie Coyle that ended up being the difference in Game 4. Koivu's been a horse all around. I mean, he's been by far the best face-off man in the series. I thought his offense was pretty solid, and he was stymied by Varlamov. Molson is a guy I think they need more from. And so he doesn't move as well as a lot of the players when it comes to speed in this series. So, to me, when I look at the way the games have been played, I don't think there's anything that those guys should be doing differently other than sticking with it because Varlamov has been so good. As far as Kemper goes, he actually played his most impressive goal, I think, in terms of the caliber of saves he had to make in relief of Ilya Brzgalov.
14 for 14.
In game two. High-quality saves that gave his team a chance. The big difference that I notice in Kemper is, A, there's a calm nature to him that I didn't notice in Brzgalov. And when he can, he's a little bit bigger than Ilya, and he'll take the appropriate step out and challenge when it's the right situation. So, but he didn't look, I think, as cool in what he was doing in game four and only saw 12 shots. So this is going to be a huge test for him. He's a player that, showed some nerves at times in his career in Red Deer, playing under Brent Sutter and that fine organization, but then came up and had to earn it, even spending some time in the East Coast League. So he's a player that I think has learned to not get tense on game days. His rebound control has been good. Can he handle the puck well with the forecheck that Patrick Roy wants to be more aggressive early? He's going to be, as always is, not only goaltending, but he's going to be a key guy to watch in this game for obvious reasons.
That's Tripp Tracy, NBC and Hurricanes analyst, joining us on Hockey Central Saturday. Tripp, we know you got to run. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yes, thank you.
Guys, have a great rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tripp. Yeah. It, fascinating series indeed. Shots in the
Tough. That's what I'm saying. They're shutting them down. Right?
78-34 in the last two games.
No, I know. And that's what I'm saying. And Varlamov certainly is, you know. And that's, you know, it's funny because you listen to the Corsi guys and, you know, all these other guys, and you look at Colorado, and their game really isn't much different than how it was played in the regular season. I mean, they won a lot of games on the shootouts and overtimes and stuff like that. And that's, hey, a win's a win, Raj. But in the playoffs, when you have to actually win it, you know, in five-on-five hockey or, you know, what I'm saying, in that scenario, we're seeing some flaws in that. And certainly their back end have done a great job in Colorado. But they're inexperienced, they're young, and there are a lot of, I wouldn't even call them journeymen, you know what I mean? I mean, they lose Barry, which is a huge loss. He was an up-and-comer. But you look at Minnesota, and you look at five goaltenders that have played in that system this year. And we look at, first and foremost, Josh Harding, which was having a Vezina year. You know, he played 29 games, won 18 of them. You know, 933 save percentage, 1.65 goals against. He's fighting an illness. It's very unfortunate. You know, a good story, but a sad story in itself that he couldn't continue because of fatigue and medications and different things. But this Minnesota team, I think, has never been a goal-scoring team. You know, the highest guy is 30 goals. That was Pominville. The next guy is Parisi at 29. But their system is what keeps them. And I don't think they were allowed to play their system. And that change, as I brought up to Tripp, that last change really affected them in Colorado. They got the benefit of it being at home. We'll see how that last change affects them this game. And if it doesn't, then they're gonna do very well because I like Minnesota.
Is Colorado just, and when it comes down to it, push comes to shove, just not ready yet despite their great regular season?
And we're seeing
dependent
some of those
on 18 and 19-year-olds.
And 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds to lead you, and that's great. I mean, Talbot is the horse there, and he's, you know, two goals in the final to win the Stanley Cup with Pittsburgh, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Left to go to Philadelphia. I thought it was an odd trade, you know, for Downey, for him. We don't even see Downey in the lineup in Philadelphia. I believe he's injured. But I thought, why would they get rid of another young guy like Downey? But he's up on a contract. Colorado wants to stay pretty close to the vest. They got O'Reilly and a couple other guys to sign. But getting back to your point is, I believe that, again, you can have runs when you're a young team, but it catches up to you. And that's where the veteran present, the experience, certainly they've got the goaltending. So their backhand is probably one of their main concerns because we see the offensive output that they get from the forwards. I think their backhand is now, even though they've done a stellar job, they don't have that horse. They don't have that second guy that, you know, the real shutdown guys. And I believe as the playoffs go on, you're going to see that exposed if they're lucky enough to get by Minnesota.
What do you think of Patrick Roy's performance as a coach?
I think it's been great. I think, you know, and I still believe that first game against Anaheim, the knee, you know, by Lovejoy on McKinnon, I thought that was cheap. I thought Patrick used that opportunity to show emotion that I'm going to stick up for you. The big brother syndrome or the big boy on the block syndrome. You got a young team like that can be influenced by emotion, be it positive or negative. And I think that was the positive. I think they found ways to win. They don't have Matt Duchene, which is an electric player. We saw him in the Olympics and this kid, what a benefit it was to watch him in the Olympics, because we don't get to see him that much. So they've got some great pieces, and I think Patrick realizes that if you can work off the youth, the enthusiasm, and work off straight talent, they can have it. They had some structure. But again, I still believe that back end. They've got the goaltending. They've got the forwards. They've got some good pieces on the back end, but I still think that's where, if they can, you know, fill that void like most 29 other teams in the National Hockey League, or at least 27 of them, Raj, then they've got a team for the, you know, for the ages, and they will continue to get better. And that depends on, again, what are they going to do with Snasty, and what are they going to do with Ryan O'Reilly as it comes down. But again, I think the back end is their the weak link.
Going to be cost a lot to keep that team together moving forward. That's for sure. Rick Natras, Roger Lajoie for Gord Stelic. It's Hockey Central Saturday on the Sportsnet Radio Network. A little later, we're going to be joined by Sean Gordon, Globe and Mail reporter out of Montreal, covers the Canadiens. Talk about the Canadiens and the Bruins. Do a preview, because we can do that since Boston beat Detroit 4-2. In a couple of moments, Eddie Olczyk going to join us as well. NBC and Blackhawks analyst. He covered the Bruins and Red Wings today and has done the Hawks Blues. Let's talk about the Hawks Blues.
Oh, God.
How about that,
sir? I mean, are they going to have enough guys?
Heavyweight fighters, and I mean actually heavyweight fighters with the injuries.
Are they going to have enough bodies left over to move on? And you know, and I know it's a long time ago, but it reminds me of the Smith Division back in the day. You know, the Edmontons, us, LAs, even Vancouver. And a lot of people don't give the respect that Winnipeg deserved in those days with Randy Carlyle, Marois on the back end. Tough, you know, Solani, they had Howard Chuck, they had some toughness up front, they had, you know, Steen, we're talking about it. So it was like last man standing, Raj, and if you had to finish them early because you needed the rest. And if you could get through a series, even if it was four games, it was a
made
tough
a huge
four
difference.
Games.
But yeah.
It was but
yeah.
It was a, you know, those four games were like, you know, war.
11.
You know what I mean? So yeah, you wanted to get through them quick and you know, so you could heal up. But this series has been nothing but again, leads, though, Raj. We're talking about two teams that were at the top of the game. Chicago maybe slipped a little, I think, in my personal opinion, and we'll get Eddie to go. I thought their consistency down the stretch was not quite there. We saw St. Louis actually go through a five or six game losing skid because of injuries, and then Miller did not perform probably, you know, the way he wanted and the way the St. Louis did. But you're looking at two teams that know how to play with leads, and they're giving up leads. We just talked about, you know, the leads, Pittsburgh and Columbus. So there's no surprise with Pittsburgh giving up a lead maybe. But when Chicago has the lead going into the third period at 2-1, you know, scoring late yesterday, and then giving it up early, you're wondering, geez, this is the Stanley Cup champion, two Stanley Cups in the last 4 years. How does that happen? And then you see the way they win the hockey game by Taves coming out off a change and scoring that big goal. I think it's just been great hockey. It's been tough hockey, but I thought last game was the best game because it wasn't the crap that was going on in at least the first two games.
Eddie Olczyk joins us now, NBC Blackhawks analyst, covered the Bruins and Red Wings today. Eddie, thanks very much for being with us, and maybe let's start with the Bruins and the Red Wings. They had the lead today. They held off the Red Wings, and let's give the Red Wings a lot of credit. They battled through adversity, injuries, one of those years for them, but boy, the Boston Bruins certainly know how to win playoff games, don't they, Eddie?
Yeah, they do, Roger, and Rick, nice to be with you guys. Yeah, I mean, they find a way, and I think that they did not want to go back to Detroit and play a game six in a couple of days from right now. And it was a pretty impressive effort. And the Red Wings kind of hung around, weren't generating a lot until probably the latter half of the second period. And I thought the best line for Detroit, and probably not a good thing, was their fourth line. And Luke Glendening, David Legwand, and Drew Miller were their best line 5-on-5. But the Bruins were able to cash in on a power play late in the second, and that seemed to kind of take the belief out of the Red Wings after tying up that game. But a convincing win when you look from start to finish by the Bruins today.
Well, Ed, you talk about the fourth line there, Eddie, and I kind of thought they had a good presence in the whole series for Detroit. I thought they were more capable of playing that physical style, winning those battles along the walls, or at least competing in those battles along the wall.
Right.
We saw
right.
Nyquist was pretty much, you know, non-existent.
Yeah, he was quiet. Yeah, he was very quiet, Matt.
You know, that guy's Yurko was that in and out the 13th floor when Zetterberg got back. The guys that really propelled them into the playoffs, where do you think they sat or your feeling on how they finished in these playoffs for Detroit?
Well, look, I mean, their two best players were, you know, I mean, they were on fumes. They're just both banged up, and, you know, Zetterberg came back and played the last two games. Hadn't played an NHL game since the first week of February, and then he got hurt after game one in the Olympics. So, you know, anytime that, you know, your best players are not at their best, I mean, who is 100%? But you could just tell that those guys, Zetterberg in particular, was laboring. And as far as Datsyuk, I mean, still just a tremendous player, and even him at 65 or 70% is better than, all, you know, probably 85% of the league. But, you know, the Red Wings had a big boost this year of the young players, and there was a transformation there in that, going from guys like Patrick Deaves and Todd Bertuzzi and Michael Samuelson and Danny Cleary to Tatar, Nyquist, Shahan, Glendening, Yurko. So I think the transformation is there. You see what the Red Wings are going to be. And, I mean, they need some help on the back end for sure. You can't rely on Cronwall and DeKaiser to be your main guys. Not having Jonathan Erickson in the series, let's not underestimate missing him in the series, how important that was for the Red Wings. So, look, a valiant effort, but I think the best team certainly won, and they proved that in five games.
Eddie Olczyk with us from NBC and Blackhawks analyst Roger Lajoie for Gord Stellick, Rick Nackers on Hockey Central Saturday. Eddie, is there a better goaltender in the National Hockey League than Tuukka Rask these days? I mean, we talk about the Bruins and what they've been able to accomplish the last couple of years, but my goodness, he is just so steady. And we see even the best goaltenders seem to go back and forth and have their bumps in the road. If there's been a bump in the road for Rask in the last couple of years, obviously there has been occasionally, but very occasionally, he has been rock steady.
Yeah, there is a confidence with Tuukka Rask when he's, you know, patrolling goal for the Boston Bruins. And you feed off of that as a player. You can play on your toes. You're not playing on your heels worried about, you know, him giving up a 45-footer from the top of the circle. It gives you such confidence inside that locker room and on the ice that he's going to be able to get the job done. And, you know, today during the broadcast on our NBC broadcast, we mentioned how good his rebound control has been, and that's certainly a big part of it. But you have to put him in the conversation for, you know, for being one of the top three goaltenders in the entire National Hockey League. Now, I know he's a finalist for the Vezina, and we know about the voting aspect, but, you know, with what he's done and how he's been playing, it's hard to argue, you know, not to put him at the top of that list.
Well, and you have to look at it. It's not like when Boston, they do give up opportunities, you know, fewer than most, but they're strong scoring opportunities, and he makes some big saves, not just casual saves. He does that as well, Eddie, and I think we don't see that because we see a Johnson's record in Boston, you know, how effective he was as a backup there, and we talk system in Boston. But really, when Boston gives up, and a good team, and you've been around, when good teams give up scoring opportunities, unfortunately, they're good ones, and the goaltender has to be really well, and I think Rask was certainly that guy, Eddie.
Yeah, he was. You have difference makers, and, I mean, look, let's go back to game four in Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, once the Bruins scored that first goal by Torrey Krug after being down 2-0 in that game, it was a crazy bounce, but it ended up in the back of the net. Lucci scored, tied it, and then, you know, they get the overtime, and Justin Albuquerque gets the breakaway. You know, he makes that big stop in overtime, and that gives the Bruins an opportunity to, you know, win in an overtime off a goal by Jerome McGinley after a real good play there from Dougie Hamilton. And it just, the confidence that they have playing in front of him, and He seems to have that confidence in game. So if he gives up a bad one or a soft one, which doesn't happen very often, he's able to forget about it and bounce back and give them that consistency. And that's all you want from a goaltender, is that be consistent. Make the routine save as close to 100% of the time as you can, and then make those spectacular ones when you have the ability to.
Yeah, and we look at the Zetterberg goal, the second goal Detroit scores tonight, right? I mean, he makes a great right leg save to you know, unfortunately, it goes over the corner and he can't get to the post quick enough. But that and most goaltenders, that goal would have been in, never mind the one from the side. So I thought he played extremely well. I want to talk, you talked about Dougie Hamilton for Boston. We all know where he's going, and we're seeing his, you know, his vision, when he certainly has the puck in the offensive side. We saw some great plays tonight. But I want to talk about Brendan Smith from Detroit. I thought it was a coming out for him. I really liked his game. I really thought he played well under tough conditions, certainly a big bad Bruins team. What do you think where he's going? He's only played, 119, 120 games. This was his fifth playoff game. So where do you think his game was, and where do you think it can go from here, Eddie?
Yeah, I think before I mention or talk about Brendan Smith, Nat, if I could, you talk about Dougie Hamilton. You look at the four of the six defensemen for the Boston Bruins that were in this lineup today and have been the last couple of games. Take Chara and Boychuk out of it, and what a great, you know, what a great foundation there, and that's a massive foundation with Zdeno Chara. Look at the guys on the back end. Torrey Krug, I think, played his 20th playoff game today. Dougie Hamilton, I think, played his 12th. Matt Bartkowski had played his 10th. And Kevin Miller played his 4th.
I like
him. When you think about that, I mean, that's just, I mean, it's really amazing. And for a lot of this season, they played with those guys in the lineup because of the injury to Dennis Seidenberg. So for the majority of the year, and to consider that they were the best team point-wise in the National Hockey League, to be able to play with that youngness on the back end and be as good as they were all season long, I think that speaks to coaching. I think that speaks to development. And I think that speaks to the system. So in saying that, the Bruins got a lot of upside here on the back end for these guys getting their reps. And look, and Leaf fans and all, last year with the injuries that the Bruins had on the back end, they were forced to use Krug. They were forced to use Bartkowski, so they got a little bit of a taste of it, and those guys are doing a really good job. Now, as far as Brendan Smith, like, he's been prone to that one major gaffe, that one play in a game where you just hold your breath, and if you had it on a string after he lets it go, you want to reel it in right away. Like, I did two of the games. I did two full games. I worked for the Bruins wing series, and in a couple of them, I tried to watch bits and pieces of the games. I didn't see any of those, but he's been prone to pretty much, I don't want to say once a game, but once every couple of games to make one of those plays. He's a big guy. He doesn't mind standing up and getting physical and going up and being involved in the play. But I think what he's got to learn is it's okay sometimes that the glass is your friend and you can throw the puck off the glass and get it out into the middle of the ice. So I think there's a lot of upside. I think he grew a lot, as you kind of alluded to, Nat, on Brendan Smith. And I think the future is very bright for him. But again, I think the one thing is that you just got to limit those real bad, nasty type of plays where you try to throw a backhand pass through the middle of the ice in your own zone. Usually against good teams, those end up in the back of your net. And, you know, over the course of the last year or so, he's had quite a few of those, but I didn't see him really any in the series against Boston, and that's a positive for the Red Wings.
Well, Eddie, I can back you up on that because I lived that a few times. So I can, you know, I got a great story real quick, though. Barkley Flager in St. Louis, Eddie, this is when I believe you're in Chicago. And my first, we're going to go head-to-head. You, Rick, you're going to play against Mario Lemieux. And I'm like, no, cocky, 23 years old, no problem, right? I got this, right? He says, one thing, don't put it through the middle. And if you're going to do it as hard as you can. So I'm standing in my corner on my forehand. I see my left winger take off, and I'm going to go from corner to blue line because Mario's 12, 15 feet away. I'm going to put it in front of him, about 3 feet off the ice, and hammer it. I hammer this thing. He sticks his stick out. It's probably 20 feet from his body. Knocks it down like it was a feather. Goes in and puts it upstairs. And I just, Barkley Plager opened the door. And I went and sat beside Rick Walmsley the rest of the night. So that was my first experience, right?
Well, hey, you know what, Matt? We got something in common. We both assisted on a goal by Mario Lemieux.
with the other team. Eddie Olczyk is with us from NBC Blackhawks Analyst. Eddie, we only got about 2 minutes, unfortunately. But let's talk about that Blackhawk Blue Series. Classic overtime battle, and what a war between those two teams. Wow.
What a winner.
It has been. And, you know, I heard you guys talking before you brought me on. You know, Chicago had leads late in games 1 and 2, and they weren't able to hold off the St. Louis Blues. And that's usually been their trademark, to be able to, you know, to go ahead and put a team away. They haven't been able to do that in the first couple of games in the series, but since that point, they found their way to get the job done here in the last couple of games. And to me, and I think we talked about this, Nat, before the playoffs had started, to me, I had not much separation in the St. Louis Blues and the Chicago Blackhawks. The only separation that I felt in this series was the game breakers, the difference makers. Taves, Kane, Hossa, Sharp, to a certain extent, was really struggling in this series. Who is that guy for St. Louis? Now, the breakout star has been Vladimir Tarasenko. But other than that, who's the guy? And you look at what's happened here in the last 3 wins for the Chicago Blackhawks, who's got the game-winning goals. Taves has got 2, and Kane's got the other one, and 2 of those in overtime. So that's the only difference. And I thought it was going 7 games. The Blackhawks have an opportunity tomorrow afternoon to wrap this series up. So we'll see what happens. But it's been back and forth. The series really changed, guys, real quick. The series really changed after game 2. When they started game 3, the supervisor for this series, Rob Schick, terrific
former NHL referee. The mandate came from the league. No more shenanigans after the whistle. No more pushing and shoving and gloves and the scrums and slowing the game down. And I think that certainly fed to the DNA of the St. Louis Blues. Since that point, Chicago's won three in a row, so something to keep an eye on tomorrow for game six.
Yeah, and I agree 100%. I think they've gotten away from that, and I think that's benefited Chicago. And Brookbank has done a great job filling in for Seabrook. What's going to happen there, Eddie?
Oh, yeah, no, he's coming out. I don't think there's any doubt, unless there's an injury of some sort. Seabrook will be back in, and Brookbank will be ready to go when the opportunity presents itself moving down. But he did one heck of a job there.
I agree.
To fill in, and that's what role players got to do, right? Two things, accept and execute. He did his job, and the Blackhawks won all three of those games when he went into the lineup.
Eddie Olczyk joining us, NBC Blackhawks analyst, and been doing the Bruins and Red Wings and the Hawks
does
and
it
the
all.
Blues,
does
and he
it
does
all.
It all. Great series. Eddie, all the best.
Thanks
so
Eddie.
Much.
Okay, guys, thanks for having me. See
we'll talk to you.
Yeah. Cheers. Eddie Olczyk doing a great job.
Yeah, I just thought maybe Roosevelt might. I thought Brookbank did a great job there. Mm-hmm. Roosevelt hasn't done a bad job, but I just like Brookbank. I think he's done an outstanding job to come in and do what he's had to do, and I just think, there's a couple of years difference in age there, and if you're going to hang on to one of them, I would think Brookbank would
be
the guy.
And I think, when you look at the two, Rick, it's funny, though. It's a great dichotomy, though, because what did we start the show talking about? Ovechkin.
Yeah.
And you got to play in. You got to do it. And yet, when you're the St. Louis Blues, who's the guy?
Yeah.
So
and we've
been
talking about that for a couple
of
years.
But that's the separation. Yeah. Taves and Kane, they're guys who get it.
And you know who
Ovechkin doesn't get it.
But yeah, and I'll get, and just real quick, I know we got to go, but Tarasenko, Eddie brought up a great point. Is this kid matured and come in, and he could be that game breaker for the St. Louis Blues? Unfortunately, I think it's not enough this year. Yeah, it's not enough this year. Yeah.
It's Rick Natras. I'm Roger Lajoie for Gord Stelic. Hockey Central Saturday continues on Sportsnet Radio Network.
The Fan on Demand.